And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Dee Dotson.
The 2024 Indiana General Assembly concluded on Friday, March 8th, with policymakers addressing key areas, including childcare, education, as well as Medicaid, just to name a few. The short non-budget session wrapped with lawmakers successfully navigating around controversial issues. Starting on July 1st, most new laws will go into effect. To discuss some of the bills he authored, including a new law that will provide financial oversight of Lake County's Tourism Bureau. Joining us now is Republican State Senator Dan Durnell, who represents Senate District 1 Highland, to discuss some of the bills he authored, including a new law that provides financial oversight of Lake County's Tourism Bureau. State Senator Durnell, thank you so much for joining us today on Lakeshore Public Media.
Well, thank you for having me. This is an absolute pleasure. And Stephanie, it's just always a pleasure talking to you, seeing you. I know we just saw each other a few weeks ago at the Edgewater 50th anniversary, so it was great talking to you.
It was actually wonderful seeing you. You were there to accept an award on behalf of Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, and so I think that was so awesome that you were there to accept that well-deserved honor.
Yep, it was an honor. Lieutenant Governor Crouch is an extremely wonderful person, and I would do anything for her. So, it was great.
Absolutely. And she is really and truly a champ for mental health awareness in this state. And so, again, that was a well-deserved honor for her. But I want to talk to you today about the work that you are doing at the State House. So I want to start with this, Senator Durnell. So 2024 was a non-budget year, making this session a short one. A lot of bills were authored and state policymakers were able to accomplish a lot at the State House. I want to start with a bill that you authored that impacts Hoosiers right here in the region, particularly in Lake County. So Senate Bill 37, Oversight of Convention and Visitor Bureau, now Public Law 102, is an amendment to Senate Enrolled Act 434, a bill that was authored by former state senator and now City of Gary Mayor Eddie Melton. Walk us through the overview of this new bill, this amended bill, and why you authored this bill.
Well, there was a little bit of a change because they only... Unfortunately, we were only given five bills, so I had like seven. And I gave this to Senator Niemeyer to push it through. The main crux of this bill is to just add oversight to the convention board. Don't think anybody's doing anything wrong over on the convention board. But it is just to give oversight, and the oversight body would be the Lake County Council, which is a fiscal body for the county. We do a lot of that. When I say we, and unfortunately, I say that because I was on the county council for about 12 years. So if I say we, it's because of my term or terms there. But we do a lot of oversight for items such as, a group such as the Park District for Lake County, some of our territories, so on. Solid waste is another. So this would fall right in that. And the main reason is just to have oversight. And I'm going to be looking at other organizations that do not have an elected body and see if we could do the same. Again, I'm not looking for anything wrong. I just want oversight and that oversight to be from a perspective of an elected person. I think the buck stops with them. The buck stops with me. And I think it was a decent bill. Along with that, in Bill 37, it does give some more time and thought for convention center towns or people that are cities and towns that might be interested in putting the convention center together, because ultimately they will have to give their plans to the commissioners and they will ultimately choose that site. But it will give them more time for them to put something together. The timeline last year was quite short, it seems like, and it just added more time that they can put a proposal together and submit it to the county commissioner.
Okay, that is excellent. I think it's awesome legislation that you authored, especially because we are just so excited about that previous bill that I spoke about that was authored by Eddie Melton and what that will mean for... I always like to talk about tourism as an economic driver, particularly in the region. Right. And so we're all just so excited for what tourism dollars will bring to the region.
Yeah, and that's a great point. So, this bill from last year, I'm working with now Mayor Melton. Last year, it was Gary-centric. This is before he was mayor. Now he's mayor. But Gary centric, and we wanted to make it Lake County centric, you know, where, you know, the city of Gary and the convention center, if it does go through, proposal is given, it does not necessarily have to be in Gary. It could be in Hammond. It could be in Maryville. It could be in St. John. That would be, you know, they're going to have to put that together, the towns, and for the proposal, whatever the best proposal is. I know this Lake County Commission will do a good job fitting that out.
Senator Drinnell, another bill I would like to discuss with you is Senate Bill 19, License Suspension, and it's a bill that you are just quite proud of. What does this new law actually mean for drivers in the Hoosier State, and why did you author this piece of legislation? Was it in response to feedback that you've received from constituents here in the region?
So this bill had a little bit of legs, and unfortunately, it was kind of diluted a bit, and I'm hoping to bring it back a little and make it a little stronger. The bill specifically will give you an opportunity. The problem comes down to your license can be suspended in an accident, a fender bender, or something more major. And a lot of times your license is suspended. You don't even know your license is suspended unless you get pulled over by the police or you try to renew your driver's license.
That's very true.
And it happened to me, actually. But the reason I did this was attorney Frank Hinkley. He was in a pretty bad accident where he broke his collarbone, and he had to go through, you know, rehabilitation. And he was coming home a year and a half later, coming home from a meeting, and he was doing, and he'll tell you, 39 out of 25. Okay. So he gets pulled over, and the officer says, you know, you're speeding. Let me have your driver's license, blah, blah, blah. Did you know your driver's license is suspended? It was, no, I did not. And ultimately, his car was impounded. It cost him $500 to get it out of and being impounded. And he can afford it. There's a lot of people that can't. So my hope is to, you know, bring it back this year. Oh, right now, let me back up a little bit. Right now, the bill gives more time that if your license is suspended, you have more time to really fight it, and the BMV has more gives you know, you as a driver more time to resolve that issue without your license. Not exactly what I wanted, but it's, you know, the process is being made. So I want to go next year and try to take the, you know, the suspension piece out. I don't think that, you know, your license is suspended. You might even receive a note in a mail. You might not pay attention to it. It's on a card, and I think it's cumbersome for people like me that my license was suspended. And by the way, when my license was suspended, the way I found out was I would renew my insurance, actually going to a different carrier, and they said my license was suspended, so I had to get that issue resolved. And it cost me some money. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. I did not push that bill because of me. It was because of the client. And as we were going through, you know, this, even one, a person from the media came up, that happened to me. Mm-hmm. I had a state representative. That happened to me. I was in Vermont. It happened to me.
Right.
And then several other people came. So it was a good bill, and it's a great start. We just now have to close the deal.
Full transparency, it happened to me. And so, you know, we've talked about the fact that I live in Illinois, and I was pulled over for something. Probably, I think I did an illegal U-turn. I was pulled over in Lake County. This was during the pandemic. I think only the two people on the road were you and me, because you had to work, and obviously I had to work. And I thought that I had taken care of everything, because at that time you had to do everything virtually and online. And when I went to renew my license in 2023 in Illinois, they said, hey, your license had been suspended in Indiana, and then it was lifted, but I still had to pay a boatload of fees. But I had no clue that I had been driving around for 3 years and had at one point had a suspended license. And so I echo the sentiments that you shared, that you too were unaware that your license was suspended. And I love the fact that it gives more room for those who are unable or not in the position to take care of whatever, the fees, the fines, etc., in that short window, that it now gives them a little bit longer to get their affairs in order. And so this bill is really, really great for all Hoosiers.
And, you know, I mean, I'm a person that's a law guy. If this is the law, that's fine. When I found out that my license is suspended, and you know how I feel, I know you feel the same way. It's almost unnerving. Like, oh my gosh, Mm-hmm. If I would have known,
right,
I would have fixed the issue right away, but I did not know, you know. And again, so many people came up to me and said, this is a good bill. We want to get this, you know, I personally want to take the suspension piece out or curtail it a bit for sure. Right now, we're not there, but we did get something, and it was signed by the governor. So it is law now.
State Senator Darnell, let's look at another piece of legislation you authored, Senate Bill 33, Distribution of Public Safety Income Tax Revenue. Can you unpack this bill and share how it will impact public safety budgets?
All we're trying to do is trying to make sure that any public money for distribution for public safety is done in a good way. Talking with some of the authors and going through it, we're trying to make sure that public safety, and for me, public safety is one of the biggest items that I want to make sure that we have. Make sure that our police are cared for. I want to make sure our fire safety and, of course, you know, first responders related to health issues. Those are things that are cared for. Our people are taken care of. We have a long way to go, but we're moving in that direction. So, you know, I mean, I will always land on the side of public safety.
I want to shift gears and look at some bills that you authored, but they only received a first reading. They did not receive a second or a third reading, and certainly they were not signed by the governor to become law effective July 1st. So you authored a bill that we spoke about ahead of the 2024 legislative session. We spoke about this back in December of 2023, and it's Senate Bill 13. This bill only received a first reading, but talk more about Senate Bill 13, a bill that will provide financial support to minors that may lose a parent due to a DWI offense. And because it stalled in committee, are you planning to revise it, to rework it, and to bring it back in future sessions?
So I do a matrix, and I have approximately 8 bills right now that I'm looking at. This is one of my priority bills for me. So the bill will be, and the crux of it, and they have this in Tennessee. Actually, I received the idea from Sergeant Fifield of Indiana State Police. He and I were at an event, and he brought up this idea. And the nuts and bolts of this, you have a person driving drunk, and they hit a young mother, and she is killed, and she has children, or a father, main breadwinner, or a breadwinner in your family. You, the person that was driving drunk that caused the accident, that caused the death, will have to now pay child support until they're 8. That doesn't stop you from, and I'm talking about the family of, you know, the estate of the person that was killed. It doesn't stop them from suing, but it still makes sure that the person that caused the accident is held responsible until those children are out of the care of the parents, or what would, you know, normally be that time. It is actually a bill that I've talked to the Senate chairman, and we are working closely to get something out there. One of my mentors, Senator Cook, who is an attorney, loved the bill. I'm going to be working with him. In fact, I'm going to see him tomorrow on another issue. And he and I'm going to talk to him and see if we could partner together and get this bill out. It's an extremely important bill to me. You know, people I know make mistakes, but, you know, driving drunk is against the law, and you should know not to do that. And if you kill somebody, I don't think it's fair for that child to be not able to financially support, or the family is not able to support him or her because one of the breadwinners of the family was killed. It's just not fair. So I am going to bring that back. It's a priority bill for me. It's not for, you know, the Senate, but it is a priority bill for me. And I hope we, you know, we will get that hearing, and it gets out of Senate committee, it goes to the House, and I already have one of my friends that is willing to take it if it comes out in a good way. So I'm excited to tell you that, and I'm so happy you brought that up, because that is a big, big bill for me.
Now, Senator Darnell, before I let you go, so we all know that 2024 is a big election year. Voters will be voting for and electing a president nationally, but also here at closer to home, we will be electing a new governor. So I want to ask you your thoughts on how national politics will impact the 2025 Indiana legislative session.
Well, the election will be over, and which will be good. I will say that I know who my favorite people are that are running, but everybody that puts their name out there I give them credit. It's not easy. Your family's being, you are attacked, your family's being attacked, and so on.
Right.
Look, my feeling about where we are right now as a country, we are so divided, and we're more concerned about what people feel, and there's a lot of emotion in the way they feel. I just want to get back to, you know, patriotic country. We do have our flaws. We do have our warts. But we have the best country in the world. And I think we have the best state in the union, Indiana. We are in good shape financially. We are a conservative state for sure. But I, you know, me coming from Lake County, I try to talk to all elected folks, because that's how I worked when I was in the county, on the county council. My hope is we get back to knowing what's important, family values, and you can define family values however you want. I get that, but I want us to get back to the routines of this is the greatest country in the world. We want to make sure that we're cared for, because if America falls, the world will follow. And I'm just very concerned about that. So, you know, I know that's more of a political statement, but it's a concern for me. I have kids that are having kids now. So I have grandkids, and I worry about them. And I make no bones about it. They are the most important things. And especially the grandkids, because they're absolutely the future of our country. As my kids are going through that now. It's something that I'm concerned about. And that's one of the reasons why I'm in public service, you know, to try to make that difference and make it a better place. And I will report to you, I believe from my heart that we are in good shape in Indiana. And I think the country follows a little bit of what Indiana and Hoosier ideals, we would be better.
Absolutely. Not only Hoosier ideals, but I've shared this with you both in interviews and offline when we've had the occasion to see each other in public, that I have not seen the kind of working across the aisle, bipartisan support, the willingness to work with colleagues that are not of your same party. I have not seen that in any other place to the degree in which I have seen it here in the Hoosier State. And so I echo your sentiments that the country as a whole needs to take a page from the book of the state of Indiana. Now, Senator Durnell, what will you be working on over the summer? Are you part of any summer sessions?
Well, I'm involved with a couple of items. Right now, I'm working on, you know, I call it the Hammond School Bill, you know, where, you know, right now a school district has an empty building. They have to sell it to a dollar if a charter school wants to, wants to buy it or use it for a dollar. And me, that I don't think that's right. I think that the school district should be able to sell it. I'm working with actually the city of Hammond. I've worked with them, and I know Lake Station is interested because they're in a world of hurt. And if we could give them some relief, that would be good. I mean, they have to be held accountable to their residents and constituents. I get that, but we need a strong public school system. I'm a school choice guy. I make no bones about it. I'm a product of Catholic school. But, you know, I believe in my heart that we need to vote. You know, I'm also going to be working to look at digital driver's licenses, you know, having both, you know, your hard license, maybe a digital driver's license. Don't know if that's going to go through, but I'm looking at some of that. And then I'm also looking, and I'm a little near and dear to my heart. My daughter is a child therapist, and I did sponsor a bill 102. Where it granted immunity to child therapists, counselors, and you know, other professionals whose license actually falls under the Behavioral Act and Human Services license. The problem is, you know, if a child's in danger, code of conduct says you're not supposed to say anything. Well, I want to give a bit of immunity to these therapists if the child's in danger, because our most precious asset in this world are children. And if there's a problem with something going on at home and the therapist feels something might be happening, they could lose their license if they break that code of conduct. So I'm going to see if that can be done. I don't know if it can be, but it's something that I'm going to try to bring back. I'm going to talk to the Education Committee Chairman, who's actually, I served on that committee. He told me at the end of the day he wasn't going to do it, but I'm going to still bring that back. So those are just a few things.
We'll leave it there, and obviously we will circle back and chat with you after the election, but ahead of the 2025 legislative session, just to see where you are, to see if how far you think that after you've done all of your homework and your work over the summer and meeting with your colleagues, to see what some of those final priority issues will be that you will be presenting. I thank you so much for joining me. You serve the Hoosier State and us here in the region with integrity and grace, and it's not something that you see quite often. And so I thank you again for joining us here on Lakeshore Public Media.
Dee, thank you so much. And to your listeners, thank you for listening, and look forward to talking to you soon.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media.
Investopia defines inflation as a gradual loss of purchasing power reflected in a broad rise in prices for goods and services over time. Economic data released at the end of July submits inflation is continuing to cool, paving the way for the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates, which would relieve some of the pressure high borrowing costs put on consumers and businesses. We're joined now by Ersheng Leong, an economist with PNC Financial Services Group. Ersheng, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thanks for having me again, Dee. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
I want to start our conversation because you always join us each month giving an economic outlook both locally, statewide, as well as on the national level. So I want to start with this. Can you tell us about some of Indiana's economic updates, perhaps some northern Indiana areas? In particular, how's the regional picture relative to the nation at this point?
Let's talk about some of Indiana's employment situation then. You know that we have two employment surveys. One is the establishment survey. Another one is the household survey. So the household survey shows Hoosiers' employment in mid-2024 continue to actually lag behind the nation and remain a drag to the nation. And the establishment survey provided a more detailed picture and some explanations over there. So according to the household survey, Indiana lost roughly 2,000 jobs in June, while the U.S. added 116,000 jobs. So we can see an apparent softening in the labor market, both in Indiana and the nation. So by just looking at the trend in the numbers, Hoosiers' employment was heading down while the nation's employment is still growing in mid-2024. You know, jobs lost were roughly 5,000 in May, 9,000 and earlier this year in Indiana. So such contractions in employment from Indiana have slowed into the mid-year. And in fact, in recent months, job growth from the household survey has been running lower than that in the employer survey, with essentially no growth so far. So the household numbers could be more volatile, but that could be a signal that the employer number is actually overstating job growth somewhat in 2024. Let's take a closer look at the establishment survey. So Hoosiers added employment in private services sector and employment from goods producing sector was essentially flat over the past 2 years following the Fed monetary tightening cycle. So if you break it down by industry particularly, it is the manufacturing employment that has been dragging. We saw gains in employment from the construction sector. So this is basically parallel to the nation's situation. Manufacturing has been dragging nationally. It's just Indiana is manufacturing heavy, so dragging more on Indiana's total employment than the nation. So to give you a perspective of this comparison, Indiana is manufacturing heavy with 16% of its total employment from this industry relative to only 8% nationally. So we could see some up and downs in the sector before the Fed moved by September, and employment level from the manufacturing has been flat for the past several years. So weakness still exists in the near term, particularly with the labor market continues to cool off nationally. And on par with the nation, the construction sector employment in Indiana is holding up well, along with the public sector job gains. So total employment in Indiana recovered quickly and marched higher and will likely continue to increase over the near term. You know, for some of the local companies, we expect auto sales will likely experience some weakness, but to stay relatively stable over the next year, you know, compared to about 8 million seasonally adjusted annual rate drop from the peak to trough in the viral recession. And aerospace manufacturing and EM General will likely get some support from continued public spending, And most importantly, the biggest employer in the South Bend area, you know, the University of Notre Dame, will also support local businesses with continued increase in school enrollment from last year. And PNC expects the Fed start in the rate-cutting cycle will bring some relief definitely to the Fort Wayne's autos manufacturing industry. To, you know, the General Motors, one of the top employers in Fort Wayne, will be backed by still strong, you know, U.S. consumers and labor market despite current weakness. You know, the logistic sector in Fort Wayne, along with the manufacturing sector, will also get some support from continued growth in consumer spending, you know, despite at a slower pace in the near term.
Now, I want to talk about that dreaded I word that everyone just kind of cringes when they hear this I word. So I want you to take a moment to share what's the latest situation on inflation. Are consumers getting any relief anytime soon?
Yeah, so the quick answer to your question is consumers are getting some relief in mid-2024. So we're seeing inflation is easing this year. You know, for example, the personal consumption expenditure price index rose only a small 0.1% in June after no increase in May. And the core PCE price index, that is the Federal Reserve preferred inflation measure, that rose 0.2% over the month, slightly more than the 0.1% increase in May. So the message there is inflation has slowed over the past couple of months after, you know, making little progress on earlier in the year. If you break it down, you know, goods inflation, you know, prices of goods continue to ease in mid-2024. In fact, goods prices dropped instead of growing in recent 2 months, ranging from, you know, autos, furniture, not on food prices, but prices, smaller things like household utensils, tableware, glassware, children's garments. I was shopping for my son. The baby bottles and pajamas were on sale too. But services inflation remains sticky despite easing in mid-2024. You know, healthcare costs, outpatient services, and prices related to housing, anything like household utilities, including water and sewage maintenance services, in electricity services, those prices were still increasing at a fast pace, despite slowing in mid-2024. And under this inflation heat, incomes are rising with job and wage gains from the slowing but strong labor market. You know, that could explain some of the heat over there. I mean, consumers are still spending. Nominal consumer spending rose 0.3% over the month. And house prices, single-family home prices growth has slowed into mid-2024 under cooling demand and low housing affordability. But, you know, house prices keep increasing. The Case-Shiller National Home Price Index fell in the second half of 2022, but has been increasing every month since early 2023 and has been setting record highs since July 2023. The home prices are rising, and we think a pickup in resale inventories and cooling demand will drive lower price growth in the existing single-family home sales in the near term. And we expect home price to, you know, continue to increase in the near term, but at a slower pace. As you know, this monetary tightening cycle is still exerting some pressures on home price, and we expect this tight monetary policy will continue to work its way on inflation to restore that kind of leading affordability. But this process is expected to be slow this year, and to reach a healthy inflation rate closer to the Fed's objective in 2025.
Great, great. It's really great for all of our listeners to hear, particularly those that are interested in the home buying process. Now, before I let you go, are there any updates to PNC's economic outlook? The FOMC meeting just happened this week, and I would love to know what are some of the takeaways?
PNC does have an update to its interest rate forecast. So, previously, we expect the first interest rate cut will be in November, the FOMC's November meeting. So in PNC's June interest rate forecast, PNC now has the Federal Open Market Committee cutting the Fed funds rate by 25 basis points in its mid-September meeting. So we think that the landscape shifted due to easing inflation and the more softer labor market that supports a sooner rate cut starting in September. And in fact, this FOMC meeting decision was largely, the decision was largely expected. The biggest change in the statement, though, you know, relative to the previous one on June 12th, was about the balance of risk. I mean, as you know, the central bank has two mandates, you know, to maintain full employment and price stability. So this statement points out that the economic outlook is actually uncertain. You know, we have we have risks from both sides. I mean, risk to have lower inflation but sacrificing full employment, or to maintaining full employment while inflation risk could go up. So, you know, by emphasizing both parts of the dual mandate of the Federal Reserve Bank, you know, inflation and the labor market, the FOMC is actually signaling that it is concerned the contractionary monetary policy could lead to a deterioration in the labor market. We think that, you know, the statements from this FOMC points to near-term interest rate cuts. And the statement noted a softening in the labor market and slowing inflation relative to June. And we think this statement supports PNC's interest rate forecast for, you know, a Fed funds rate cut on September 18th. And the fresh jobs report this morning also supports PNC's forecast for September to be the start of this rate cutting cycle. In fact, the July jobs report was soft. You know, job growth only was only about 114,000. And there were also downward revisions to job growth in May and June. You know, following the expected rate cut in September, PNC then expects additional 25 basis point cuts in December this year and March, June, and September next year. So hopefully the easing monetary policy soon in the next months will start to, you know, bring some support to local employment in Indiana.
Wow, wow. Again, as always, we always appreciate when you check in with Lakeshore Public Media, giving an economic outlook both locally, statewide, as well as nationally. I thank you so much for spending time with us today, and I cannot wait to have you join us back next month.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, Dee.
For nearly 160 years, PNC Financial Services Group has been committed to providing their clients with great service and powerful financial expertise to help them meet their financial goals. For more information, visit www.pnc.com. And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. Lakeshore Public Media is behind a new free and transformative tool for local organizations that offers streamlined processes and enhanced capabilities to optimize volunteer coordination. Lakeshore Public Media's president and CEO, Chuck Roberts, as well as Carl Keurig, vice president of development, recently joined me in studio to discuss the new NWI Volunteer Hub. Here's the conversation. I am just so excited to have you two in studio with me to talk about the new initiative that was recently kicked off. So again, Lakeshore Public Media is excited to unveil the new NWI Volunteer Hub, which is a comprehensive digital volunteer program that any nonprofit, civic, faith, or health-related organization, a government municipality, or a business here in the region can use, and I should add, at no cost, thanks to support from our amazing community foundation partners. So Chuck, tell our listening audience more about this new online platform.
So I've gone to many community meetings, and I heard a lot from a lot of different organizations that there is diminishing numbers of folks that are volunteering. And I asked them specifically, where are they asking for volunteers? And they said on their individual web pages. And I saw right away that the issue was if people aren't going to the web pages directly, then they don't know that the organization needs volunteers. So I came back to the station and told Carl, we need to do something about this. We need to fill in the hole. And my idea was to create a simple page that had like Excel spreadsheets with information that you'd go see the information, get the phone number, and go to it. And Carl, being the ingenuitive person that he is, said, Chuck, we can make it better than that. We can invest in software and create a page that's interactive and an environment that helps deliver volunteers to where they need to be. So we came up with this volunteernwi.org platform that allows people organizations that need donors to post their organization, what their needs are, how many folks they need them, where in Northwest Indiana this volunteering is supposed to happen. And then people who are looking to volunteer can just log onto the site, type in either the type of organization they'd like to be with or the area in which they'd like to volunteer, and that's populated on this site. There's also a calendar, so the organizations that are involved can post events that are going on, and it kind of helps planning, because if you see an event already there, an organization might not schedule at the same time, which helps out. But there's also going to be tools in there to be able to track the number of hours a volunteer does, which correlates to money for the organizations. But speaking of money, because of the support that we're going to get for this site, it's going to be free to vendors who post information on it, as well as free for people to come and find volunteerism.
The Lakeshore Public Media is a nonprofit organization, and I want to be clear. Is this a digital platform that was developed specifically for nonprofit organizations to use, or can any organization utilize the new NWI Volunteer Hub?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not limited to nonprofit organizations. We've actually had discussions with Mayor Milton and Gary on how his administration can use this to organize their community volunteers who are doing some amazing work in the city there. And we understand that it might not be a registered nonprofit, or it might be a small community group of volunteers who get together and do park cleanups. It could be, you know, a wide range of things. And so we didn't limit it to just nonprofits. And that's why, you know, again, you don't need to have a tax identification number to put in there to get, you know, your opportunities up. Lakeshore will monitor it to make sure that, you know, that all the organizations on there are legit. And if we have any questions, we'll reach out. But for the most part, we wanted this to just be anybody, any organization, any community that needs volunteers in order to become, you know, in order to have success in what they're trying to accomplish, can use this tool.
I think that's awesome that you said, and Chuck, you can chime in. I think it's awesome that you added that it's not just a nonprofit organization, but just thinking about all of the government entities that are out here that need volunteers, especially you mentioned Gary, they are working on blight in that community. But a city like Gary, being able to utilize this to mobilize volunteers, I think is so awesome.
And there's going to be a calendar, a community event calendar on the site as well. So nonprofits, small businesses, municipal entities that have an event that they want to promote, it can be on that calendar where it's a one stop where people come in to find out what's going on in the area. We just want to be a resource to help shed a light on all the other resources that already exist in Northwest Indiana. And we want to do so through this volunteer hub. Once again, at volunteernwi.org.
Chuck, again, the NWI Volunteer Hub officially launched several weeks ago. And when you and Carl are out in the community at community events, meetings, engagement opportunities, you're serving as ambassadors or evangelists, if you will, sharing the good news about this new digital platform. I want to go back for a moment, though. Why did Lakeshore Public Media take the lead on this initiative? And to that point, what has the response been who are using this platform to connect volunteer opportunities?
It's an example of Lakeshore filling a hole that was needed. We went to the volunteer festival there in Crown Point, and once we mentioned just a couple times that we were going to start this hub, people were just, there was a buzz, and people were coming to the table. How do I get on? How do I put my needs on there? One gentleman said, I need large men to lift heavy things. And I thought, well, you can put that on your profile and let that be known that that's what you need is someone to do some heavy lifting for you. But it's all about also the resource that Carl talked about. It's bookkeeping. It helps you keep track of your volunteers and what they're doing for the organization. Helps you monetize what it is that's being done. A lot of the nonprofits reached out to us and told us without volunteers, they would have to raise hundreds of thousands of extra dollars just to stay alive.
Wow.
So it's not just about quality of life and helping people, but that's a main part of it. But it's about keeping the organizations alive and living. And we saw that need, and we decided to create volunteernwi.org to help with that.
Carl, I want to turn to you for a moment specifically because it's your team that heads up the technical aspect of this new digital platform, right? So we live in a day and age where many people are concerned about their cybersecurity. And not only individuals, but organizations as well. And so someone may be listening and they may want to ask this question. Is this new site safe and how will it be monitored?
Oh, first of all, there's not a lot of personal or private information. Like I said, from an organization standpoint, you don't even have to put in your tax identification number or anything like that. And as an individual, it's pretty much just your location, so that this way you can sort opportunities, your first and last name, and then really just the type of interest you want. So an email, phone number, so that you can be notified. So there's not a lot of sensitive information on it, but obviously it lives. That's why we have it kind of hosted on our website. This way it gets the same securities and protection that our website has, and we definitely want to encourage people to, you know, not worry about the information that they put on there, because we're not sharing it with anybody either. It's really just the information that's needed to keep that communication flowing between the organizations who need volunteers and the individuals who want to volunteer. And so there's not a lot of worry there.
Yeah, if any other site is asking for your social security number to volunteer, don't do it. Go to volunteernwi.org and sign up there, or find the organization that you'd like to volunteer for at that site.
Again, that was Lakeshore Public Media's President and CEO Chuck Roberts, as well as Carl Keurig, Vice President of Development. To learn more about the NWI Volunteer Hub and to create a profile as a new individual or organization, visit www.volunteernwi.org. For more information on how to support Lakeshore Public Media's Volunteer Hub initiative, please email sponsorship@lakeshorepublicmedia.org. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media.
Talking with our children about the upcoming general election, voting, politics, and even civic engagement can feel a bit overwhelming. But it is important that we recognize that little minds are like sponges, soaking in everything around them. Our youth live in a connected world and are constantly confronted with political messages, so discussing politics with them is a way to engage authentically. These conversations also serve as an opportunity to let them know the value system you use to critically engage in the world. In a heated election season, how can parents foster social awareness and civic-mindedness in even the youngest among us? Indiana Youth Institute President and CEO Tammy Silverman joins us now to discuss her latest column, Talking to Children About Politics. Tammy, as always, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
It's my pleasure. Happy to be here.
Tammy, as I shared a bit with you offline before our conversation today, it is so fitting this month's column focuses squarely on a topic of discussion that I recently had, and I'll just call it a spirited debate, if you will. I was part of a group that was planning a large event to honor older Americans. And of course, you know how meetings go. People begin to have sidebar conversations. And of course, one of those sidebar conversations landed on today's political climate. And everybody chimed in their thoughts on candidates. And I began to ask the group that were engaged in those conversations how they are approaching these conversations at home with their children and their grandchildren. And Tammy, I'm going to share with you, there was this hush over the room. And I don't know if it was generational, but I was in a room with some older Americans planning, an event for older Americans. And then they reminded me of the old adage of children are to be seen, not heard, that they should remain in the room, but they are not to engage in quote unquote or participate in quote unquote adult conversations. And I reminded them that 2024 is not like 1984, 1994. Not even 2004. And the kids, they have access to media, to social media, and so they know what is going on in the world today, particularly with the political climate. So again, I am so happy that you wrote your column. And so I have to ask you, is that why you made the decision to write this month's column, Talking to Your Children About Politics?
Well, yes, I would say certainly. You know, I think we do have I think sometimes politics are so charged with adults that we assume that it's going to be equally as charged, or it must be equally as charged with young people. And in fact, there's a lot of conversations and there's a lot of conversation to be had that is more foundational and it doesn't have to be contentious and can be more grounding, I would say, than starting at the very end, kind of, and remembering that kids are just learning how to engage in these discussions, and they need guides and they need supporters to help them, you know, because at the end of the day, we do know that having the kids that are engaged in their community, kids that, the kids that vote and show up and volunteer, all of that, that translates into really favorable benefits to them personally, not only to our communities, which we know we need, you know, young people to be engaged and we need future leaders to be curated and all of those things. But we know that kids who volunteer and vote have positive mental health and physical health benefits. Also, that civic engagement in all of its forms is actually associated with increased future income and education levels. So it's good for our kids to be engaged, even though sometimes it can feel a little sticky.
I was going to ask you about that because you do note in your latest column, the find from the journal Child Development, those exact things, the impact of civic engagement on the future success, as well as volunteering and voting on mental health. And I am so glad that you had the foresight to include that in your column because people don't necessarily correlate those things together.
Right. Sometimes we think we need, you know, we want everyone to be engaged so that, you know, we can, you know, say that we had such a turnout rate or whatever that is, but it's actually good for the individuals and for kids. So then it becomes, you know, at what age do you have what conversation? And you know, with you really there, you can start at a very young age, even young kids ages 5 to 8, you can start talking about concepts. And having some of those early conversations.
So Tammy, we all know that, and you alluded to this at the start of our conversation, that children are in fact sponges. They soak in everything. But having conversations about topics, again, that many of us believe are above their heads are tough. So take a moment, if you don't mind, to walk us through step by step how you document how we can engage in these age-appropriate conversations.
Certainly. So little kids, you want to keep it very simple explanation, kind of how government works, the role of the president, Congress, Supreme Court, you know, really kind of those easy things. One of the activities that is recommended for really young kids is let them vote. Let them vote on, you know, what movie we're going to watch tonight or what dessert they might have or snack or what game we're going to play. So that they understand the concept of voicing an opinion, but being one of those opinions. And you know, ideally, sometimes their vote will carry and sometimes their vote won't. And then also letting them process, how do I feel when my vote did lean to get to the outcome I wanted? And how do I feel when it doesn't? And then think about how the other folks feel, right? If you get your favorite dessert tonight, you vote and you win and you think, great. Well, then maybe my friends or sibling didn't get what they wanted. And let's try to put ourselves in their shoes as well, which shows, you know, just teaches that voting process and showing up matters and that sometimes you win and sometimes you don't.
One of the paragraphs in your column, model respectful dialogue. So whenever I engage with children, I always ask myself, when kids tell us something, is it bothering them? And do I listen to them so they know how to listen to others? And also, when we listen to kids, do we show them that even the smallest, most vulnerable voice in the community deserves to be heard? And I think that you kind of shared when you went through the steps on how to make the conversations age appropriate, not only how to make those conversations age appropriate, but again, let the young people know that their voice deserves to be heard.
And kids do want to be heard. And we also need to, as you said, model that behavior. So even when it's something you disagree with, it's important to discuss differences calmly and respectfully, and to use those I statements where you say, I believe that, not that we must all, because we know that not everybody shares the same beliefs, not everybody shares the same values. You know, you want to avoid derogatory language, and really one of the biggest things is showing a willingness to listen to other perspectives. Listening doesn't cost you anything, right? It doesn't mean that you agree. It doesn't mean that you're going to change automatically. It just says you have, as you were saying, you have a right to be heard, and I'm willing to listen.
Tammy, in the minute or so that we have left, I love how you wrap up the column, sharing that we should talk about focusing on values. So again, we all know that 2024 is a big election year, not only nationally, but bringing it back to the Hoosier State, as we will be going to the polls on Election Day, voting for not only the next president of the United States, but also the next governor for the state of Indiana. And unfortunately, our kids have heard a lot about candidates it's both positive and negative, particularly within the last few months. And they could have heard it on media. They could have certainly heard it on social media. And again, the values that they hear via those media outlets may not necessarily align with the views and the values that you have in your home. So as we wrap up our time together today, share the importance of values. As you know, they can help children develop a sense of civic responsibility as well as a desire to contribute, and I know positively, to our society.
Right. And as you said, you know, it's really one of those things where all of this comes together of staying in conversation, learning to listen, showing your voice, having some of those conversations on those values that many of us, most people, I would say, even hold sacred, which is fairness, truthfulness, justice, the importance of civic engagement, and even pride for our country. And focusing on some of those bigger concepts, regardless of, you know, candidate or party or what those things are, really helps kids understand that there's a bigger purpose and that, yes, of course, we want to stay informed and we want to, the voting is so important and we want to be active. Don't lose sight over what a privilege it is to be in the democracy that we have and really focusing on those values that really unite so many of us.
Wow, Tammy, I think that's actually an excellent point for us to leave our conversation on. You know, I always enjoy having you with us because you share information about your organization, Indiana Youth Institute, to, of course, ensure the well-being of all of our youth across the Hoosier State. But you also share information to help us as adults to be better contributing members of our society as well. So I enjoy our time together, and I thank you for joining us, and I cannot wait to have you back with us next month.
Thank you so very much.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for this week. Thanks to our guest, and we'll be back with you next week with an all-new show.